and live. Ruth, I'm so happy to have this conversation with you. I'm in Brighton, UK. Where are you now?
New York City area.
All right. What's the situation in New York in this moment? Are you in lockdown or not?
We haven't had the kind of strict lockdowns that there have been some places in Europe. Now you know they forbid eating indoors. So they have in New York City, all the places have like these outdoor sheds in a way where people are eating. Right. And you know, in New York City, where I am, there's mostly mask wearing. So it's okay. I think elsewhere in the nation, where people don't want to wear masks, it's a lot more difficult.
Got it. I don't know. I'm a little bit confused now because I'm in the third lockdown in UK, and I have this weird dichotomy in my head because I'm Italian, and so I have a strong feeling of the Italian situation, but I live here, and. Yeah. And I was expecting like a different way of dealing with COVID, more, you know, British, professional, we manage things. And it was a very Italian way of dealing with COVID. It was really confusing. They close, they open, then they say, let's go to the restaurant. We give you 50% off if you go to a restaurant. Everyone went to the restaurant in August. Big spike in COVID. So it's a very strange historical moment. You should put some new books about it in the future.
Yeah, no, and it's really hard. My mother is almost 90 and she lives right. in the UK in a village in Cheshire. And she's become, she's very confused because exactly what you said, there's this, you know, switches in policy. And then, you know, one minute you can go out to have a coffee and the other you can't. And I think for older people who are isolated, it's also, it's demoralizing to have this confusion and the feeling the yes. government is not really competent as you might want.
The feeling is that maybe an idea for your next book could be after the strong man, the weak man, and try to see all the weakest leaders in the history. Because also, I think I'm passionate about the way people communicate or leaders communicate, and I find it really weird that one day maybe Boris Johnson, but it happens also in other countries, you know, they just talk and say, yeah, you know, we heard that maybe this variant of the virus is 30% worse than the other one. And I mean, you can't just say like that. I mean, you need to have a good plan and prepare population. Otherwise, there is panic. And so I don't know. This is a very weird historical moment, this one.
It is, and one of the lessons is how important leaders are, not just in the way they interact with people, but the culture of leadership that they foster. So when you have somebody who is very, as you say in Italian, alla mano, and maybe isn't as disciplined as a speaker, but it also causes over the long run, when you get to more extreme personalities like Donald Trump we have here, it causes a kind of deprofessionalization because there's a politics of spectacle where the better you are at dealing with the media, and I talk about this in my book a lot, the better you might be received by some, but the value of politics and the value of professionalism and competence goes down. And that's, of course, when it's bad for a country.
Don't you think that the problem is that in this historical moment, it's very easy to have a strongman showing up and say, look, I got this. You vote for me. I will solve everything. Give me the power. I'm going to do this. And people will say, all right, look, I give you everything. Just take me out of this lockdown and solve the situation. And that's it. You know, do you think there will be a spike of strong men in this historical moment around the world?
Well, we've already seen how COVID allowed people already in power, like Putin in Russia and Orban in Hungary, to kind of complete their, you know, capture. There's a lot of resistance you see in Russia right now. But, you know, Orban now rules by decree. So, but, you know, what I wanted to do in this book is to look at the if there are patterns in when these kind of rulers have find favor. And one of them is after a society has been through a lot of change, which makes some people happy and other people angry and anxious. So, for example, the patterns are starting with Italy, which, you know, came out of World War I, so a lot of chaos, but a lot of emancipation, either for workers' rights or gender emancipation. Think about, like, after the war, you know, women got more rights, were able to work. And then racial emancipation. So in the United States with, you know, Barack Obama in power for 8 years, and this was never supposed to happen for some Americans. Yeah. So you have, it creates an appetite for somebody who can kind of turn the clock back and also just have a law and order governance, although, you know, mostly it turns out to be kind of lawless, which is the lesson of a lot of these leaders. They take your rights away in the name of restoring order.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think Snowden once said about the privacy issue that the strategy is always the same, and the government come to you and say, give me your freedom in exchange of your safety, and so give me all of your data, and that's the price you pay to be, you know, safe. No terrorism. We'll take care of everything. But in the meantime, you gave everything you got, so there is not a good exchange. But Italy, I mean, it's crazy how Italy is really good in many things, also in launching some authoritarian regimes, you know. Like, there was a comedian then that, who became then a politician, Beppe Grillo. I don't know if and Grillo had this joke all the time that Italy was a virus, and we were a virus for the rest of the world, in a good way or in a bad way. You know, we have exported mafia, and we have exported you know, the Mussolini approach, and so on. Is it like that? Or it's just a coincidence?
No, Italy has been a laboratory for politically, and for also for good things too, for civil society. Because one of the things we learn, you know, in history, where, you know, these authoritarians, they want to break the horizontal bonds we have to each other, family networks. So they make, you know, people inform on their families. And this is when you have real dictatorships in the past. And so Italy's been a laboratory, very important, and it doesn't actually get factored in enough. Italy is not, I've started as a historian of Italian fascism, and I have a lot on Italy and Berlusconi and Mussolini, also Beppe Grillo's in there. It's in Salvini. It's very important to give it its credit, both in the way that pioneering fascism, and then with Berlusconi, the center right, and also populist reactions, such as that of Beppe Grillo. And I've been talking about this in America a lot, because when Berlusconi was voted out in 2006, and the center left came in, and Berlusconi had many corruption trials and charges, and the center left didn't really want to make that their priority, because people in the States are debating about what to do about Trump's corruption. How strong should the government push back? And they didn't really do much, because they wanted to turn the page and move ahead. And this is partly when Beppe Grillo, who had a blog, he started channeling this populist anger at all establishment, you know, politicians. And he had, excuse my language, but it's his language, the fuck you day. Where he had, you know, hundreds of thousands of people demonstrated. So I've been talking about this because if we don't do anything when a very corrupt person is breaking all the rules, there is a price to pay for that. So Italy has a lot of lessons if Americans and others will listen. And so that's why I've been writing so much about it.
Absolutely. No, it's also interesting. I think that it's not so easy to understand a country like Italy if you don't really, you know, deeply live inside the culture. It's a completely different world.
Totally.
It's, 8 years, 9 years I live in UK, and Italy is really a bubble, an echo chamber, and it's really a war, completely different. Obviously, every country is like that, but Italy is weird. For instance, Grillo, yeah, he did the Vaffa Day, but he was a comedian, so his approach has always been very provocative and humor. So it was completely different. If something like that would have happened in UK, it would have been a completely different thing. So it's incredible how to understand a country, you really have to go deep into the culture of the country. And when did you start to study Italy? And why Italy, by the way?
So I grew up in a place in California, and I have no Italian connection family, but I grew up in a place in California where a lot of anti-Nazi exiles right. lived. So I got interested early on, and in fact, I was going to focus on Germany. And then I went to graduate school, and somebody said, why don't you do Italy? It lasted twice as long as Nazism. And, you know, if you want to look at intellectuals and culture and propaganda, you know, there's Mussolini was pioneer. So I started that, and then I moved to Italy, and I've spent many years there. And so I was including the years when Berlusconi first came to power and normalized the far right. And this really affected me because I was a student of fascism, and I saw how, you know, Berlusconi was saying Mussolini never killed anyone, and you had Fini, Gianfranco Fini, the head of the National Alliance, who was very careful to dress in business suits. An aviator frame, so he looked like I used to call him a fascist yuppie, a fuppy.
Right.
With the old language of yuppie. And so I lived through this, and it really affected my work to not only to write about what happened, but the memory of it. And what are these historical periods when there's a lot of desire for this kind of leadership, but it means you have to whitewash the memory of the bad things they did. And we're seeing this today in the world. And that's another reason I wrote Strongman, which is also, you see Putin, who's putting statues up to Stalin, but then sending historians who write about the wrong things about Stalin into prison. So I felt like it's time to really look at, you know, in some of the book is difficult to read. I talk about torture and other things that are not nice, but it's part of getting the record straight about this kind of destructive leadership.
Yeah. Italy is interesting the way sort of in Italy, few things that happened in US with Trump, I knew it before, not because I'm a genius or I'm an historian or I do research like you and I know the facts, but just I lived it on my skin like all the Italians. Yeah. And so you know in advance what will happen if they find something about abuses or girls. You already know they will say, I don't know, or jokes and everything is. You arrive in a situation. I would like you to explain this. You arrive in a situation that no matter what he does, his fans are still with him, and the media are the buddies, and is all conspiracy, and the left is, you know, the bad guys, and will save the world, and everyone stay, you know, again with Berlusconi or Trump. Yeah. But so you think, what else have to happen? I mean, what else does the man have to do? So why is that?
Yeah, in the States, you say the Teflon, that nothing sticks to them. And this, of course, Berlusconi had this. No matter what he did, people stayed loyal to him. And I write it, he's a lot in my book because of this. So one of the things that's very important is the personality cult. And I have a lot about personality cults in my book. And so when I saw Trump in 2015, he started having the rallies and the loyalty oath, and getting people to bond with him and speaking the language of emotion, saying to people he loved them. Berlusconi had even wrote a book about amore, you know, everything was about love and about, you know, how he would he told them, I'm making myself beautiful for, you know, bello for you with facelifts. So they seem very open and transparent. But of course, they're the most savvy, manipulative people. They know how to use the media. So one thing I discover is many of these guys who had success had been in mass communications. So Mussolini was a journalist, but also Mobutu, who of the Congo.
Right.
He was very charming and very cruel, of course, but he really knew what he was doing. And Hitler had been, he wasn't a professional journalist, but he wrote a lot. And Hitler practiced in front of the mirror all of his gestures. And he took hypnotism lessons and he took voice lessons. So these guys are like, they're actors, they're showmen. But it's a serious thing. It can seem superficial if you say it like that. But they know how to be whatever the culture needs them to be at that moment in time. And so they also can be different things to different people. So Mussolini used to say, you know, A to something, to somebody in the morning. And then in the afternoon, he would say exactly the opposite. But the glue of all of this contradiction is his personality. And so they will use their body very effectively. They know how to be on camera. They know how to seem authentic. So they all have like a direct communications channel. That's just them and the people. So Mussolini had newsreels. Hitler also, he had radio. Trump had Twitter. Very, very skilled before he got kicked off. So these are the patterns. Yeah. But once the personality cult like gels and consolidates and people are loyal to him and the bond is there, it no matter what they do or say, the bond doesn't break, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah. There is one comment that is from Hughes. Look, I'll put it here. Hughes de Payens. I don't know if it's the right way to de Payens. I don't know. Sorry, Hughes. He said, I'm sorry, but you guys need to make a distinguished essay. Berlusconi is a bad guy, not just morally despicable. Trump is not someone involved with mafia or bonding with far right parties. So there is a huge difference, but you cannot make them all the same. That's an interesting point. So let's go deeper into the strongman types, because one thing is saying Putin and one thing is probably saying Berlusconi or Salvini. I mean, there are different levels,
totally,
I think.
Totally different.
What are the main differences that you see, apart from the legal and illegal things that now a strongman will do?
So, but first of all, to respond to the comment, Trump has decades, it's documented, of connections to the mafia, different mafias, American, Italian-American mafia, Russian mafia. This is all documented very well. And also he has normalized far-right parties, the militias, the neo-Nazis in Charlottesville. He told them they were very fine people. This is all part of, this is similar. But the book is a historical book. And so it's not a comparison. In fact, I will not call Trump a fascist because it's not historically accurate to do that. He uses techniques that, you know, Mussolini started, but he's not a fascist. So you have the age of fascism, you have the age of military coups. And this was 20th century where you have dictatorships, like a one-party state, you know, no press, free press. And today things work differently. And Berlusconi pioneered this. He didn't wreck democracy. Right. He left. Obviously, Italy had a functioning democracy, was voted out and then was asked to resign in 2011. But you do have authoritarian playbook that they all use. And it's corruption. It's machismo. It's propaganda. It's violence and the myth of national greatness. So everyone does it in a different way. Putin is far more repressive than Orban, for example, in Hungary. Orban now rules by decree. But he hasn't had to use much violence. Putin poisons people. Putin sends people to jail. So everybody does things differently depending on the histories of their countries, too. A lot of these repressive things Putin does were from communism. And he was in the KGB, right?
Yeah.
So the point isn't to say everybody's the same, because that's stupid. That doesn't teach us anything. But the point is to show how they all use the same techniques. They have a different outcome. But we can learn from these techniques because there is a playbook that repeats over 100 years.
One thing, Ruth, I would like to your opinion about is this one. I've been in China three years ago, or something like that, and I had this strange feeling. On one side, obviously, I'm an entrepreneur. I am free, like properly. I don't like if I don't know someone say to me move this. Like that. I want to do it by myself. You know, I'm that kind of person. So I'm not really good into an authoritarian regime, definitely.
Right.
So on the other side, I've been to China and I've been there for 3 weeks. And, you know, after a couple of weeks, I thought, well, I was in Shanghai, was very safe, very well organized. And I thought, you know what? It's not too bad. You know, like this thing of having a president that decide everything and you go in jail, you disappear, you don't make the road dirty or right. You'll disappear. It's functioning, it's very efficient, you know. And after a while that you live there, it become very normal. And wow. You think, all right, this is good. It's working good. If I behave in a good way and I'm not a good person, a bad person, I will have a good life. So it's that kind of, how can we say, it's very attractive, I think, mm-hmm. If the authoritarian regime is played in a modern way, you feel like you can do stuff in a more efficient way. And, if you play according to the rules, obviously you lose completely your freedom, but this is a little distinction. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, no, this is, I'm glad you mentioned this because I call this the myth of authoritarian efficiency, it's a productive form of government, that there are no strikes, there are no disruptions, the trains run on time. This was Mussolini's. Yeah. And of course, what makes this possible, you know, jailing opponents, having everybody have self-censorship. And this is because it becomes normalized and these states hold out the advantages for those who are, in Italian, you say inquadrati, you know, in their line, in their lanes, and they don't say things or do things. And so they offer the benefits to the included, you know, and show you very clearly what happens if you're the excluded. But one of the things that this covers up is the history of destruction, including of business. And this isn't known enough that, you know, authoritarians go after business people, starting with the fascists who seize the assets of political enemies, then Jews as well, but many other people. And up to our own day, where, you know, Erdogan in Turkey has seized $32 billion worth of assets from business people, including small business people who had, you know, worked for decades in family businesses. And so the state becomes like a predator. And this reaches its culmination in Putin's Russia, where you have a kleptocracy. But we don't hear enough about the tens of thousands, and I had to triple check this when I read it because I thought it couldn't be right. Tens of thousands of business people have been jailed or had their assets, preyed upon and seized by the Russian state under Putin. He's been there 20 years. So right. Is it really good for business? Or once it becomes too corrupt and then everything gets siphoned into the leader's own also personal wealth. In the end, I argue it's not at all good for business. We go back to the deprofessionalization. It actually, over the long run, it can take your initiative away because you don't have rights. So China's not in my book because I wanted to feature people who wrecked democracy, so I don't actually have communists in the book because they inherited a system that was, was already closed, let's say. But China is a great example of this problem that you pose. This is the central problem of freedom. You make profit and you have curbs on your freedom. Is this something that is worth it for you?
Absolutely. It is the same argument about privacy that is good. You know, you give up everything, you're safe. Yeah, but you gave up everything, your life, your privacy. You don't have anything anymore, anything left. So it is incredible. By the way, Jack Ma, that, I mean, he's one of the most important entrepreneurs.
He's missing.
Yeah, I mean, he was missing, then he reappeared with the video. Yeah. But the crazy thing, Ruth, in my opinion, is that if tomorrow Jack Ma disappear, people will say, all right, you know, he's in China. I mean, it disappeared. You know, he spoke badly against the president, maybe, and that's it. And this is crazy. I mean, it can't happen. So, but
no, and there are many Jack Ma's. This is the thing. We he's too famous for us not to hear about him. If he goes missing, people notice. But there are many Jack Ma's who. So that's another thing we didn't even mention. It's not just I was focusing on the businesses, but people disappear and then they may come back, but they've had their warning. And this is China is a police state, and they all are police states, and so. This is another side. And I think there's another story to tell about this, all this myth of authoritarian efficiency. I have a sentence in Strongman about Pinochet, which was a US-backed Chilean dictatorship, which was supposed to be profitable, and it was for the elites and for the US multinational corporations. But I say there was less petty crime under Pinochet, but more crime of the type that scarred you forever, that started with secret police breaking down your door. So, you may not have this purse snatchings and there's less trash. Everything looks beautiful. And in fact, Pinochet built something called Sanhattan, which was a neighborhood in Santiago of glass skyscrapers that was like playing on Manhattan. And everyone said, oh, how beautiful. Look, Pinochet doing such good things. But then the secret police are torturing people. So
yeah, absolutely. I think that probably it's also how connected the authoritarian playbook efficiency is with a lack of education. And I always wonder if you are educated and you know about how communication works, and you don't decide only based on emotions, but based on facts, and you have a logical evaluation. Does it help, or the playbook works in any case?
No, it's fundamental. So we already talked about the personality cult. So you bond to the leader, and you believe that whatever he says is right. And of course, the fascist slogan was Mussolini ha sempre ragione. Mussolini is always right. And there's some version of this in most of these states. But you also have to I have a line in the book called strongmen disappear people, but they also disappear fields of knowledge and information. And nowadays with social media, it's very pernicious because, for example, if you interfere with search engines like Google, or you can ban, we know that they ban platforms periodically during periods of protest. You know, Putin and Erdogan and others will ban platforms. And of course, social media is huge in its own way in China. But the search engines and the database that you as a consumer of knowledge are drawing from is already censored. And after generations or years, you don't know. So you don't know if it lasts long enough, what you're even missing. And then you become like a creature in a habitat, in a cage of sorts, and you're not even knowing unless you travel a lot. So that's part of it too. That's the scariest part, that you don't realize anymore that you're working with a limited view of database of information.
You are Neo in Matrix, basically, and you...
Yes, exactly.
Something like that. There is a...
Yeah.
It's sort of like you are in this Matrix, and sometimes you have the feeling that there is something wrong, and you say, well, what is it? Do I have all the information about this topic, or maybe not? On the other side, the problem is that we are bombarded with conspiracy theories of any kind, and this... And this you know, also create more confusion. And then you have people that goes on another extreme. And so it's a very difficult time to navigate. There is one question, a lot of questions, by the way, in the chat. I'll just grab one. Antonio here is asking, Valerio. Professor, could you tell your opinion about Boris Johnson and the Brexiters? I'm also curious about Bojo, Ruth. What do you think? What's the situation with Boris Johnson?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm not an expert on British politics, so I'll just say a little, but this is when I talked at the beginning about this kind of politics of personality. He's very much goes with this, this veneer of kind of aristocracy and fancy knowledge, but then this, one of the things he represents the most is this false populism, this idea that you know, that you're anti-globalist, which Brexit was very, those who liked Brexit were very much about this, when in fact that whole political class is depending on global finance, on they're complete globalists, and Trump is like this too. Trump was a mechanism of global finance, getting all this money from the Russians, from Deutsche Bank and Steve Bannon, all of this new right and populism. This is one of the biggest hypocrisies. And then we see now with the results of Brexit, not to personalize things, but my mother, who's been, again, she's almost 90, she lives in Cheshire, in region area of England, and she's become kind of radicalized. She used to be a Sky News conservative, and now she watches RT, which is Russia Today, and she's become much more right-wing, and she was a convinced pro-Brexit. And now she says, I'm so sorry, I was misled by Boris Johnson. It wasn't a good thing. So he managed to prevail through the force of his rhetoric and personality. And I think now we're seeing that it was, you know, it was not in the nation's perhaps best interest to do so. So he falls into this kind of faux populist hypocrite in my book.
Got it. I wonder what will happen now in Italy. I think today, by the way, Conte resigned. So I think that Italy is without a government, probably, or not. I don't know. I was following until a couple of hours ago. And in Italy, you know, the situation can change any second now. I'll tell you. All right. Yeah. Conte resigned. And Salvini and Meloni say no to the Conte again. And so they will try to understand now. I think there are consultations and they'll try to understand. Do you think in Italy there is maybe a moment now, a space for like a strong man that take control, or what's your prediction based on Italian history?
Yeah, so toward the end of the book, when I talk about Berlusconi having to finally end in 2011, he had to resign.
Ruth, sorry to interrupt you. Maybe Berlusconi will come back. I mean, in Italy, you never know. Maybe Silvio will be the next president. I mean, I wouldn't absolutely say that it's impossible.
Yeah, he was, maybe people forgot, when he had to leave in 2011, he was banned from running for office. But this was the crazy thing. His party in the next elections in 2013 almost won. It only lost by less than 1% to the center left. So his myth continued. But when I'm concluding my speaking about Berlusconi in the book, I do mention that in one way he was not suited to go into the future. And that was, he was a maestro, a master of TV and personality cult, but he didn't understand the internet. He wasn't able but who does? Salvini. So Salvini has every attribute of the strongman, the showing, using your body in a charismatic way, where he's, you know, he poses with the bathing suit and the cross on. Then he's tutto autarchico. He's about only eat autarchic. You only eat and drink Italian things. And yet he's connected to all of this European populace. He's being mentored. He was mentored by Orban, by Putin. So he's a good candidate. And I have to say the Italian center-left and even five-star movement have been very vigilant in not letting him enter the government again. Because this is, and now with the Brothers of Italy and Giorgia Meloni, who's a very interesting figure, because I think that I say at the end of Strongman that because there's no women leaders in the book, and there's reasons for this, but that in the future we will have an authoritarian leaning state led by a woman, because women are very important in the far right today. And Giorgia Meloni is one of them. So there is definitely a threat there. And coronavirus, again, makes, you know, for more economic hardship, more uncertainty. And this makes people more attracted to a Salvini-like figure who is the strong and he puts on the uniforms of the law enforcement and he's openly racist. He's there in the end of the book as a future threat.
Got it. Do you think, Ruth, that this is just the, how, I don't know how you say in English, the fate of humankind? I mean, we as a humans, we will just keep having these cycles and these strong men or strong women, and that's it, because it's just the way we are wired as a species, and we need from time to time to believe in someone that has the magic wand and solve all of our problems, or we'll evolve to a point where it will be just a memory of the past?
Yeah, that's a great question. And of course, you could argue that, because over and over, you really have to have the right conditions, though, for these people to succeed. It has to be this, you know, again, this rapid change. It has to be, and social media makes all these conditions more dangerous, because propaganda works on repetition and saturation. And now we also have conspiracy theories. And this is a big difference. I say in the book that Mussolini, in 1939, he banned the use of question marks in newspaper headlines, because you have to lock down the meaning, right? Wow. Yeah, it's interesting. And he was like Mr. Editor-in-Chief of Italy. He was very attentive to everything with the press. So he didn't want any uncertainty. But Putin, it's all, and Trump, and it's all about uncertainty. And people get exhausted trying to figure out the truth. And this builds an appetite for someone who says, like Trump, I can fix it. I am your voice. You don't even have to think or speak. I will do it for you. And that's like classic authoritarianism. So there is that. But I also, I have a chapter on resistance. And this really, it was like a total relief to get to be able to write this chapter after writing all the other bad stuff. And so these people don't last. Inevitably, they don't end well. You know, some of them had to go into exile. They get killed or they kill themselves. And maybe this less likely today they would get voted out. So Berlusconi was a pioneer there too. But there's a huge, you know, reaction people have all over the world that doesn't change to, and even in a pandemic, look what's gone on in Russia, look what's gone on in Hong Kong. And this is very inspiring, that people will risk their lives, they'll risk their health because they care about freedom. So it's both, right? And this is the eternal dynamic in politics between people who will do anything to defend freedom and people who will do anything to take your freedom away.
Reading the chat, I understand that in 2021, there are still a lot of Italians that would vote Berlusconi. And also knowing a bit, you know, my fellow Italians, I know that still there is a way of thinking about strongmen and Berlusconi in this case that probably goes like that. All right, I know that he did all the things, bunga bunga and whatever. I mean, I know that he's really not a person that I could give, I could leave my daughter with, or I could leave my house kiss. But he's funny. He knows how to do things, and better than someone else. I think there is a lot of this way of thinking when you talk with people about strongmen, and I don't know why deeply, what's the deepest reason of this? And I don't know if you found some facts about it in your
book. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're entertainers and they make politics exciting, especially in the case of Berlusconi, where he didn't wreck him. It's not like Putin. He's not poisoning people. And you have this with Trump. And so it's been really interesting where there's been a discourse now about Biden might be boring. Well, you know, my personal opinion, it's very good to be boring because you're not creating scandals every moment. You're not having, you know, sleeping with underage women. You're not, you know, all of this. And you're not creating a scandal to distract from your corruption. This was what Berlusconi and Bolsonaro is expert in this. Duterte, these new leaders are very expert in creating crises and creating scandals to cover up and so that the media attention and the public's attention, the memes, all the social media circulations, they go where the leader needs them to go and they stay away from the other things. And so look at this, what's going on in Russia today with Navalny, who has exposed Putin's corruption. And Putin is used to being able to control the media discourse. And so here comes Navalny back and talks about his palace and shows pictures and makes a video. So this is a crisis. And the only response that the strongman has is violence. And this is what Putin does. So, in fact, there was a character, there was a person, Boris Nemtsov, before Navalny, who was also exposing his corruption. And he even testified to the U.S. Government about Putin's corruption, and he was killed in 2015. He was killed.
Is there a vaccine to strongmen in the history, or not?
I think education, education, in civic bonds, and Italians are very, very strong in this. You know, knowing how much we depend on each other and family discussions and community discussions. I also think that faith is important. It could be a religious faith, even though religious institutions have always backed the strongmen in their countries and they make these deals, right? And this is kind of an irony because it started with Mussolini, who was the most unpious church-hating person, and yet he made peace with the Vatican, up through Trump, who is the most profane individual, and yet he is acclaimed as ruling by divine benediction by the, you know, by the evangelical Christians. But I think that faith, it could be civic, secular faith, and this Italian society is very full of this, a faith in, it's not even patriotism, it's just a faith in ethics, at community ethics, and this can be used effectively if there's enough energy invested in it, as well as for others' religious faith, doing what is right.
I wonder, Ruth, and a final topic, and then I'll let you go, and thank you for this conversation, very inspiring. I wonder if in the future the way of creating strongmen will radically change and we'll have strongmen starting from social media influencers that gather together millions of followers and then without any political background, any real preparation, they will just say, you know, let's go, let's do it, give me your vote, I'm going to do it because I'm good. And that's it. I mean, it's like saying Conor McGregor, the MMA fighter, if he's going to run for politics in Ireland, he will get a lot of votes. It doesn't matter if he knows anything about politics or not, just to give a fictional example. So what do you think? Is this something that maybe will happen?
Well, that's going to keep me up at night. Thank you. It's true that this is where we could be going because already you've seen that people like Trump and Berlusconi in his day, they need the ecosystem of the media to emerge as personalities. And Salvini, who's very good. Remember Salvini had a picture with his girlfriend on Instagram in bed.
Right.
So that there's the illusion of, you know, we had now like influencers, it's all about their personal lives being public. There is no private. And so this is very appealing in politics too. And so, yes, this could happen. I don't know. They would get a certain point of down the road and then they would have to affiliate with a party. But this is also what Mussolini did. He had a movement and then it became an official party because he needed to get a party to run for office. Yeah, we could be headed in this direction.
Let's see, and let's see also with Biden in the US what will happen. I mean, I have a positive feedback around that I perceive. Like everyone that I'm talking with, the feeling is like, all right, there is an end of the Trump era. Let's go to a more, I don't know how to say, a more moderate way of a conversation, a more professional, educated way of discussing topics, something like that. I don't know if in the US there is a similar feeling.
There's a feeling of hope. And I also think that, you know, over 70 million people voted for Trump, which is very Berlusconian and very depressing. But right. Some of those people, okay, some are like hardcore Trump forever, and there's nothing you can do right now about them. But I do think there were people I call situational voters who maybe didn't love Trump. He's not their God. But they were under the influence of propaganda that told them that if Biden comes in, there will be socialist apocalypse. This is the phrase. And I think that maybe it takes 6 or 9 months, or maybe until we have the 2022 midterm elections. But when they see that socialist apocalypse is not coming, because it's not, then maybe they'll be more persuadable, especially if this government is more competent with coronavirus and economic relief, and they start to see real improvement in their lives. So I'm hopeful on that. I'm not. I am an optimist by human nature, which helps me to write about these horrible people.
Yeah, I imagine.
But I am hopeful with that.
I was curious, Ruth, also in chat, they asked me, what's your media diet? What are your best source of information to have a way of seeing the world that is right and competent and explore all the facts around what happened? Do you have any suggestions for us?
No, I it will probably be horrible to people what I do. So I don't. I have cable TV, but I don't watch TV news ever. Right. I get most of my. I use Twitter as a clearinghouse for news, and I read the Washington Post. I read some major foreign papers, I make sure that I have a big variety of voices on my Twitter. And so I get a internationally also, I can read several languages. So that helps. So it sounds a little bit haphazard, but that's what I do. And it works for me, but I don't watch much TV news.
Okay. Got it. Not even some Netflix television series or something that is...
No, entertainment for sure. Oh, okay. No, I'm watching Netflix all the time.
There is sorry, Ruth, there is a very interesting documentary about Berlusconi on Netflix that I watched recently.
Okay, I'll check it out. Yeah. No, I thought you meant news. Only if this was... I was only talking about my news diet. Yeah. I'm watching Netflix all the time.
Is it anything cool that you watched recently? I watched The Queen's Gambit. That was fantastic recently. I don't know what you watched.
I watched The Queen's Gambit. I also been watching like this the Spanish language shows like La Monarca, these crime shows. I also like the Norwegian show, like Occupied, this kind of the Nordic crime. I like these. I'm watching Blacklist. Yes, something. I don't like to, the one thing I don't ever watch historical fiction, because even though they're really good, sometimes it feels like work to me.
Right, right.
And I work enough. And so when it's finally time to watch something, I don't want it to have anything to do with my
no
work.
No more history. No more history.
No, when no, basta.
Basta, yes. Basta. Ruth, thank you very much. Strongman, your new book. I really wish you good luck. It sounds fantastic. And I invite everyone to go buy it. And let's keep in touch. I hope to meet you soon as this COVID craziness will end. Thank you so much.
Okay.
I'll see you soon.
Bye.